And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. 4 minutes past nine on this Tuesday, the 28th of October. You're very welcome along to the 9 to noon show. It's the first one of the week. Hope you enjoyed your long weekend, if you were able to avail of it. I suppose lots of people work the weekends, don't they? But anyway, I think the majority are off for the weekend. So hopefully it was good. Hopefully it was nice. It was breezy last night, though, which was lovely when you're trying to get sleep, for me anyway. Okay, we are going to be having a bit of a post-mortem, a bit of a debrief on the presidential election. Your new president is Catherine Connolly. She's the president elect, and sending good wishes actually to current president Michael D. Higgins as he continues his recovery in hospital. He's in there being treated with antibiotics for an infection. But the people of Donegal spoke, the people of the country spoke, and it was a very interesting election on many, many different levels. I think the spoiled vote was an interesting one. We had a show on Saturday. If you heard it, thanks for listening. If you didn't, but I suppose I was reflecting, you know, as people were talking of spoiling the votes on this show, I was sort of, I couldn't really, honestly, right, because I prefer to be honest. I never said it was a silly campaign. I would never lose language like that, but I just thought it was effectively handing the election, if you were opposed to it, either Catherine Connolly, as it turned out, or Mairead McGuinness. But I suppose the level of the level of the spoiled vote does actually send quite a strong message, and it dominated quite a lot of the conversation and coverage. And I suppose those that were engaged in it were saying, we're not going to win the election with a spoiled vote, but we send an incredibly strong message. And I think that did happen. I think it did happen. So I think I, in some of my commentary in the lead up to the election, it's not, I didn't see the sense of it if you didn't want to see the other two elected. But then I suppose when you see the scale of it, it was about not necessarily stopping them being elected, but in fact, sending a message. And that message was heard loud and clear, I think, anyway. So I'm always one for putting my hands up and saying, you know, I think I read that one wrong, to be honest with you. But anyway, we'll be discussing that and other elements of the election. We'll be breaking down what happened in Donegal. Also, we've got Community Garda information coming up after 10 o'clock. That and so much more besides over the next 3 hours of the 9 till noon show. And we want you involved throughout. If you've got a comment on anything, not just what we've got lined up, but if you want to raise an issue, maybe there's something going on in your life, in your community that you think we should know about. Maybe you've got some good news or some positivity to spread. We love that too. 086 60 25000. That's the WhatsApp and text number. 086 60 25000. Alternatively, you can call 07491 25000 or email comments@highlandradio.com. And if you listen to the podcast or the overnight repeat, feel free to get involved in the conversation. We'll pick up your comments and carry them through to the next live show, right? And you can watch the program as well if you're at home, working from home, working in the home, for crying out loud. Your Fire Stick, your Smart TV, we're on the YouTube app, Highland Radio Ireland. We're across your Facebook pages and on the X platform as well. What's making the front and inside of some of the papers? Well, the Irish Times lead, Taoiseach to avoid Fianna Fáil heave in the short term. There is little apparent appetite among Fianna Fáil TDs for an immediate heave against party leader Micheál Martin, a survey of the party's Dáil deputies suggests. But Fianna Fáil's disastrous presidential election campaign may still threaten Mr. Martin, who many TDs declined to say if they back the Taoiseach as he prepares to enter his 15th year as party leader. And I suppose you could count amongst them backbencher Deputy Patrick O'Gallagher. He has refused to endorse, or the opposite really, Micheál Martin. Mr. Martin will continue to meet backbench TDs this week as he attempts to heal relations with his party in the wake of the embarrassing exit of Jim Gavin from the presidential race. Loyal ministers yesterday appealed for calm from their colleagues after Mr. Martin was publicly criticised over the weekend for his stewardship of the party's failed presidential campaign. Wicklow Wexford TD Malcolm Byrne, who will be meeting Mr. Martin today, said that the Taoiseach had led Fianna Fáil through some very difficult periods. The presidential election campaign, though, was a disaster and has left many members and supporters angered and disappointed. But are they prepared to speak out? I suppose, how does it go next? The greatest threat to Micheál Martin would be if another senior member of the party were to challenge him a Jim O'Callaghan, for example, if he thought he had enough backbench support. So maybe that would be how it might be triggered. Someone comes out and publicly, and a highly ranked politician comes out publicly and says, you know, enough is enough. I don't know. We'll see. The Irish Independent this morning. Longford is the only county to avoid a traffic fatality so far this year, as road deaths have risen above last year's levels. Road Safety Campaign Group Park has revealed that fatalities involving motorcyclists and pedal cyclists have spiralled to the highest level in almost two decades. By Sunday, October 26th, a total of 139 people, two more than for the same period last year, had died. In Donegal, very sadly, 10 of our wider family, I suppose, have lost their lives, which is a high number, only lower than Cork and Galway. And if you look at 10 versus the total, it's far too great a percentage of the overall total, considering there are 26 counties. And of course, there are in the Republic. And there are variations and reasons as to why, dependent on the road layout, etc. But, you know, Dublin Road's incredibly safe. They've got an awful lot of fast carriageway there, maybe indicating that that is a safer way to get about on the roads. But Donegal, 10 people, 10 of our potential listeners, their families, their friends, mums, dads, daughters, sons, have passed away. And it's just too high. It really, really is. I want to pick out another story in the Irish Independent, and it's comments from a priest. And I've kind of tried to speak in this space previously. I'm not saying I fully agree with him, but I'll read the article and we'll tease it out from there amongst us. It's a priest warning that condolences on death by suicide may not send the right message. A priest in the west of Ireland has appealed to people to stop posting comments such as "he's in a better place now" or "he's at peace with the angels" when sending condolences for those who've died by suicide. Speaking in the Cathedral of the Assumption in Tuam, County Galway, at the weekend, Father Mark Quinn revealed in recent months he'd experienced his most difficult week of ministry so far. In the space of just 1 week, 7 days, I attended the funerals and burials of three middle-aged men. Each one of those men had died by suicide. Father Quinn said many people had spoken to him that week about the devastation of it all, and they questioned why Ireland now had a terrible epidemic of suicide. Between 450 and 500 people die by suicide every year in Ireland, 80% of whom are younger or middle-aged men. Appealing to people to be careful how they use words, Father Quinn said words such as "he's in a better place now" did not send the right message to people who might be struggling. And I do have agreed with this priest in the past. Now, I mean, I'm agreeing with him now, but I've thought these things in the past. And I particularly have a worry about this with younger people as well, in that sometimes I think younger people don't realise necessarily the impact their actions might have on others, because they're young and they don't understand, you know, how as you get older, you fight for life so much, right? You the last thing you want to do is die, and that comes with age and experience. And I think younger people maybe don't understand the finality sometimes. I don't know. A psychologist would understand this better than I. But if you were feeling like that and you're a young person and you watch on and you see another young person that's passed away, you know, often it's a huge funeral. There's guards of honour. You know, there are can sometimes be specific social media platforms set up to celebrate them. And there is often this language of being at peace or flying high with the angels. And for younger people, I think that potentially could almost glamorise it. Is that the right way of talking about it? For older men, I, according to this priest, it has an impact as well. I'm not quite sure about that, but it does give this impression that if you do take your own life, that there is you're flying high, you're at peace. And, you know, I mean, you would hope they are, and often they are, if you understand, but that depends on each person's belief system. But I do think we don't want a situation whereby we set things up in a way that makes something more attractive than it might otherwise. Now, you don't condone, call names or anything like that. But I just wonder what you think out there. What is the general feeling? I suppose if it's a family member, it might be comforting, because you're seeing this outpouring of, you know, words of solace and stuff. But maybe we do need to think, do we, and look at the bigger picture and think that maybe it might glamorize it for a younger person who doesn't understand the ins and outs of everything, or maybe it might just be that tipping point for an older person. Maybe that fella's saying, well, I'll show them, you know, I'll show that person that, you know, I want to get at, because they'll see what people are saying about me. I don't know. But I think we just need to be careful and maybe have a careful conversation about it. What do you think? WhatsApps and texts to 086 60 25,000. If you completely disagree with the priest, or maybe you agree with the priest, or maybe you've got a personal experience, it's completely up to you, of course. 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. Caroline, you might give that sheet about the Donegal Town. Just, I don't have it with me here. Because it ties into this story of, I sat on this programme during the summer, just anecdotally looking around, talking to some people in the tourism industry, that, you know, there were some businesses that just looked like they were holding on, or looked like they are holding on. And you get through the summer and you hope to, you know, make money. And that money's often used to help you through the winter periods and into the next, you know, boom time. But I don't think the numbers were around to sort of give businesses, a lot of businesses, that space. And I said on the show that I expected, you know, in October, November, to see a spate of businesses closing, because I didn't think the reduction in VAT was going to be enough for them with all the other costs that they have to incur. So reading from the Irish Daily Mail, a majority of tourism businesses have reported either a decline in revenue or no increase in turnover this summer. Fulcher Ireland's latest tourism barometer survey found 43% of all tourism business had reported a fall in income this summer, compared with the same period in 2024, with a further 20% reporting no change in business levels. Just over a third of businesses, 37%, said revenue increased, although turnover levels overall have declined. So power is not coming down. Wages are going up. Other expenses, input costs are going up. It's putting pressure on the smaller businesses that also maybe can't diversify a bit in the winter to bring people through the door. And I'm not attributing this to this story I'm reading next, but very sad news from Donegal Town. A second Donegal Town business closes. Dock 84, O'Hare's Bakery, Donegal Town, has closed. On their social, they said, a heartfelt thank you to all our wonderful customers in Donegal Town for your loyalty and support. They have stores in Ballybofey and Letterkenny, which, of course, I want to be clear, are remaining open. 55 in Donegal Town Business Park will close next weekend. Its owner thanked customers who became friends. She also thanked her dad and said none of what they had would have been possible without them. Now, I don't know why they closed, and I'm not attributing that to this, but I can imagine, say, Donegal Town, incredibly busy in the summer. And you really need to make your money in the summer, though, because it can be quite busy at the weekends, but like most towns, it gets very quiet. And I do wonder how many other business owners out there are going, you know, do we lose another $6,000 in November, or do we pull the pin now? And I just hope it's not too many. 086 60 25,000 if you want to talk about that, or if that affects you. Right, OK, so you had your say on Friday, and resoundingly right across the country, not least in Donegal, your president-elect is Catherine Connolly. So some of the stats, a moment of correction on, of course, here in Donegal, the margin of victory for Catherine Connolly was the fifth highest in the country at 54%. Heather Humphreys had one of the lowest percentage of votes in Donegal, 38th out of the 43 constituencies at 20%. At 4% in Donegal, Jim Gavin received the second lowest percentage of votes, 42nd out of the 43. Donegal had the 25th highest level of spoiled votes, 12.7%. Out of interest, the highest was in Dublin North West at 20.5%, the lowest in Dublin Rathdown at 6.8%. And the overall turnout across the country was 45.8%. That's higher than 2018. But if you wanted to remove the spoiled votes, it's either the lowest or the second lowest turnout ever. And just how did people spoil their votes in County Donegal? Well, 29.4% of you who did spoil your votes, just spoiled your votes. So that could be multiple X's, a big X through it, whatever it might be. 41% of you put Maria Steen's name on the ballot paper. And this is a sample of ballot papers. Maria Steen and what the tallies people deemed a far right remark was at 14.4%. So Maria Steen named in total 55% with a mixture of her name and her own, or what was deemed a far right remark. And 13.8% of people that spoiled the boat just put down a far right remark. Now, I don't know precisely what they are, but I presume it's things like, you know, some anti-immigration sentiment or something along those lines. Whether it's far right or not far right, the Tallies people just deemed it so. So that's kind of an overall breakdown of how things went in County Donegal. The editor of the Tyrconnell Tribune is John McAteer, of course. John was with us, thankfully, in the Cant Centre on Saturday and has been digesting everything since. Good morning, John.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm all right. So what message did the people of Donegal send? They overwhelmingly back Catherine Connolly, of course.
Well, the first thing is that the margin of spoiled votes was huge. You know, we're a fairly conservative county in Donegal. If I would have been pushed out on Saturday before the votes began spilling out of the boxes, I might have said a couple of thousand, but you have to have 4,334. That is massive. And the effect that that has, and it does have an effect, it pulls a decent, respectable turnout of 45.8 down to under 40%, 39.9. Now, in that situation on Saturday, the margin was so huge it didn't. But had Heather Connolly, or had Heather Humphreys and Catherine Connolly been running neck and neck, there would be question marks about the spoiled vote to an extent that either could claim that they were the victor. Thankfully, that didn't happen, but this is a whole new phenomenon. I wouldn't dismiss it or criticise it. People do what they think is right. The fact that campaign began from literally out of nothing and it permeated itself into every single polling station across the country is quite massive.
Yeah, and I misread it in the early days because I thought it was I didn't realise it wasn't about stopping either candidate from getting elected. It was about sending a message that, you know, we're the 49% here. We're the people that don't feel there's a candidate in the race for us.
See, there's something very seriously wrong when you have a huge cohort who went to the polls and they boosted the turnout, and they did so falsely by being there because they went to the polls not to elect a president. Now, we have not been at this point in our democracy or in our constitutional rights ever since 1937, because this would have been about the last thing we would have thought of. I think it shows that there's a huge disenchantment there. That Irish Times poll 8 days out from the election showed that 49% didn't feel represented by either of the two candidates, and they're well entitled to do that. But, I mean, you have to ask then, does that mean that there's a disconnect between the likes of Micheál Martin, Simon Harris and all those.
Well, it is because, and we were discussing this on Saturday, but most people wouldn't have listened. The reality is as well, what the government party and their PR people thought were controversies in relation to Catherine Connolly were some of the very reasons why people were voting for her in the first place, which further would indicate to me a disconnect with what the general population think about matters such as a European army, our position on certain global issues, etc.
Catherine Connolly campaigned on those issues. Top of her list was housing. And I mean, you've only to look at the Dublin constituencies, all 12 of them. She steamrolled her way through them as if there was no opposition. Margins of 5-1, even in the Taoiseach's own constituency in Cork South Central. Her margin was 3-1. Numbers of other constituencies similarly. So one of the big concerns in Fianna Fáil now is as they're now analysing those results, and in Dublin particularly, where you get the real voice of Ireland from all aspects, from very poor, from very wealthy, and the Novo Rich and all of these people, there isn't a TD in Fianna Fáil that would feel safe. And as far as Simon Harris would be concerned in Wicklow, she steamrolled her way through that as well as if he wasn't even there. I mean, he would have been, as one's constituency, I would have expected Heather Humphreys to have won because the leader of the party is from Wicklow and probably campaigned in Wicklow, but he was whacked. And at the end of the day, this was a very angry electorate talking out in the only way that they can, that you had that 213,378 of them. You know, it's 12.7% is a huge, huge amount of people.
It feels a little bit at this point that if Simon Harris speaks even, that he's going down in the opinion polls. It's like nothing he can say can address his position in the public psyche.
Well, that's because, you know, he came in 18 months ago and it's just only then promising new energy and new vision. He dropped 10 seats to Micheál Martin at the local elections and he made an awful mess out of it. This time was worse even, because he tried to absent himself as much as possible. He wasn't on the airwaves all that much, but any time he appeared, the criticism just mounted. And the result, I suppose, it's a huge disaster for the Taoiseach himself. And party members will have to ask themselves, is he the man to go on leading us, even though he's only there? I mean, just listening to Sean Kelly was on Sunday, very, very bitter, very realistic, that there are two good candidates. One of them was anointed and the other one was shafted. And that was the way it happened. You know, Fine Gael has this new idea that the minute somebody goes, within an hour, there are 40 members of the parliamentary party backing the official one. And I mean, that happened with Heather Humphreys. Within hours, 40% or more of the parliamentary party were backing her. And they didn't do that accidentally. They were being prodded and pushed by head office in Dublin. And Sean Kelly was left with 12 votes and he had no option. He couldn't reach that quota even to contest the race against her. That's not democracy. I mean, when people are being prodded and pushed into backing somebody, probably against their wills. And
you factor into that, you do have to factor into that too, and councils, councillors, I understand, were part of the decision-making process, but Fine Gael also, I mean, obviously you could argue they blocked a candidate within their own party, but they also potentially blocked other candidates from entering the race. You throw that all into the mix, it doesn't feel terribly democratic.
See, that diktat came from Simon Harris, it was completely unnecessary. But Fine Gael stuck to that rigidly. Fianna Fáil stayed silent. They didn't back anyone. But they thought this was clever, we'll stay silent. What's the consequence? That nobody outside of mainstream politics stood a chance of ever getting on a ballot. And that's wrong. I mean, we're still now stuck with the 1937 constitution that laid out a very different vision of a very backward Ireland. It's 88 years ago. There's been more demands and there'll be bigger demands now for a full revision of the electoral system that'll be taken out of the hands of the politicians entirely and be handed over to Arthur Leary and the Electoral Commission, who'll be quite capable of managing and handling that.
If you were strategising now, if you're either Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil, both party leaders are under pressure. Both are seen by many as the two cheeks of the one bum, right? And Fine Gael arguably are going to become less popular as those lines and that difference blurs. Is this government going to go full term? I'm less convinced it is. I can see a split where both parties try and establish their own identity again under new leadership. Or do they hope that the public forget and have a couple of giveaway budgets before the next general election?
Well, their last throw of the dice when the MRBI poll came out on the Thursday week was to go totally 100% negative in attacking Catherine Connolly. That backfired spectacularly. It probably created a whole new area of votes that you could tap into. And, I mean, Heather Humphreys had to get over the 65 age group to have any hold or any grip on the ground at all.
And Connolly outpolled her in the over 65s as well.
Yes, she did. But it was the only group that she got any real traction with. But like at the end of the day, their mismanagement of the election, it's like something out of Fawlty Towers. It was just that bad that you couldn't believe.
But what will the consequences of it be?
There will be consequences. There'll be big, big consequences because it is so early into the leadership, it is so early into a new government. They're not there a year until January. So they have plenty of time to they can circle the wagons for all they're worth, but TDs are a bit more astute than that. I suppose against that, you have numbers of TDs in very prime positions in government, in cabinet, junior ministries, chairs of committees, membership of committees, and there's this kind of a fixation that this is a career, it's a job for life. We couldn't give up this extra 20, 30 or 50 grand a year that we're getting. Politics should be about a lot more than that, and I would hope it would be, especially in Fianna Fáil's situation, given that Micheál Martin is into his 15th year there, and he is deadwood at this point. It's just a question of who can pull the right triggers and who can do what.
I want to ask you a couple more questions.
I think that will happen.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'll tease that out with you, if that's all right, John, as to how that might happen after we take a quick break. We're discussing the fallout from the presidential election. Catherine Connolly is your president-elect and put in a very good campaign, it has to be said, and ran away with it in the polls to the point that by the time we went air at 12, it was all done and dusted effectively. And we knew that was going to be the case. There's a limit to even how much me and John can waffle, believe it or not. By the way, someone asked, can you listen back to the coverage yet? It's a two-hour show. You can go to YouTube and go back a couple of live streams and you'll see it there. It's on Facebook as well. John McAteer, editor of the Tyrconnell Tribune, is with me. And just listening to some of the commentary from backbenchers and reading between the lines, the Donegal deputy, Pat the Cope Gallagher, not endorsing Micheál Martin necessarily, but also not saying he lacks confidence in him. And I've heard a few others reference waiting until such time as this investigation into the selection of a presidential candidate is concluded. That just feels a little bit of biding the time here that, you know, there is potentially a push or a heave or something along those lines, but they want this process to conclude first. Or am I running away with myself, John?
No, I think it's pretty definite the heave now has gathered momentum, very much so over the weekend. You can never dismiss the kind of a result that Catherine Connolly delivered, because I've written from day one, and I think you've been saying much the same, this was a vote of confidence in the government, and they were whacked. They were hammered into the ground, and particularly in those working class areas, the less affluent constituencies around the country, they took an awful pasting. And Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael's seats will definitely be at risk. And unless both of those teams, Fianna Fáil, it's quite obvious that Micheál Martin simply has to go. He no longer commands that kind of support that he had, because we were hearing the bizarre stories on Saturday afternoon that he didn't even intend going to Dublin for the announcement that he was doing a slot on the RTE 6 o'clock news. And then when he came, he eventually got there and he just defended himself, saying, well, I'm here now, and I didn't realise that the count was going to be declared so early. Mm. What was he waiting for? He should have been in Dublin all day, reassuring his backbenchers and just taking them for cups of tea and saying to them, it is bad, it's probably going to get worse, let's be realistic about it.
Let's say he doesn't survive a heave, or he gets a sense of which way the wind's blowing and steps down and, you know, I've done my time, I've achieved this, I can't take the party further and I want to give, you know, the next person the opportunity to prepare the party for the next election or whatever it might be. You know yourself, John, ChatGPT writes the script itself. But what would a post-Micheál Martin Fianna Fáil do? Like, Jim O'Callaghan, I think, is a very different type of politician. If it were he, I could see them sort of maybe moving more centrist, slightly even easing in a slightly more righty type of direction. Would the Fianna Fáil stay in power with Fine Gael under a new leadership for the term of the government, or what?
We have no idea what kind of a leader Jim O'Callaghan might be, because he plays his cards very, very close to his chest and being a senior counsel. That's understandable. He probably has a good rapport with a lot of the TDs that's there. John Lehart would be sort of the man that speaks on behalf of him on RTE. The change is needed, for even for the sake of change, to give the party a new direction and a new purpose. And the second attraction for Fianna Fáil there is that leader would be based in the centre of Dublin. Jim O'Callaghan might not even want it. I mean, he talked about it as far back as 2020, that it was his intention to be a Fianna Fáil leader one day. It's 5 years down the road or more since that happened. But when you go beyond Jim O'Callaghan, you're looking at very few. Darragh O'Brien.
Jack Chambers.
I think he is born to stick. Mm. You know, I don't think that he would have the confidence of the parliamentary party at all, because he is seen as much to blame for the Jim Gavin debacle and bringing him on board. And they're not going to get away from that there. They're not going to get away from a whole lot of issues around this election, because Neil Martin was probably too long in power.
I think it's just interesting, John, if Micheál Martin sees which way the wind's blowing, does he bother with a long, slow-burning heave? Or does he, you know...
Well, you know, you'd have to ask... Charlie Hoy stuck it out. He faced 6 or 7 heaves. We lost track of the many he faced, but he turfed it out. Micheál Martin might not have that fight in him to do so. Mm. He might, at this point, have thought to himself, I've served the country well. The backbenchers have lost my confidence. I handled it very badly. Will he be humble enough to admit that he made a complete and utter balls out of it? I think that he probably might be. He'll have surveyed the debris of the last 3 months. You know, that there were candidates there that should have been in the running and they should have had a voice at the parliamentary party. And that was stuffed out. There was no communication allowed at the parliamentary party where you have over 70 Eritas members. Mm. That was totally arrogant.
Before we go, the 12.7% of people that didn't vote. Now, I know a lot of people... and when I say a lot of people, I'm talking about 5, 6, 7 that I know who voted, but they voted for, they felt they had to vote or wanted to vote, but they voted for either Catherine Connolly or Mairead McGuinness, but not because they were the candidates they wanted, if that makes sense. They would like a
Absolutely,
third option.
Yeah.
So how do the 49% of those that feel they didn't have a candidate in that election be represented now? The 12.7%, I don't know what the spoiled votes turnout was, right? So say those that were inclined to spoil their votes, what the turnout amongst them were, for an example. So in other words...
I would estimate roughly the turn, you know, the spoiled votes is always running at about 1.8% at the most. You mean, at our last presidential election, we had 750 or less spoiled votes. This time we have 6,434 or whatever. That is a phenomenal thing. You know,
who's going to speak for those people, though? Who do they vote for, be it in Donegal or nationwide? Like, does Maria Steen send a message to government by standing in the Galway by-election, for an example? Does that test where we're at? Does that become a referendum on national politics?
It could be any one of a number of them. It could be Declan Gandley. It could be Eddie Hobbs, well-known figure on RTE. Face recognition. He was for a generation. He was never off the television. It could be one of those. But Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael and the government will have to move. I think there's no doubt that the referendum itself is long since outdated, especially on electoral reform. You can imagine that there's 2.9 million in the country in 1937, 38, and De Valera got it set in stone that Fianna Fáil was going to be in power forever. And like that was wrong, but we've had ample opportunity to revise that and to make the whole process more holistic to more people. I mean, the idea of shutting out people is wrong. We don't do that very well. In fact, we do it very, very badly. But like at the end of the day, the first thing that should be on the agenda is electoral reform, and it should be handed away from the entire political process to the office of the electoral commissioner, and let him sort that out, and I'm quite sure he would do.
All right, a lot of food for thought, if you're interested in politics, certainly I think a very interesting few months ahead. Thank you very much, as always, for your expert views, John McAteer.
Thank you.
Bye. And you'll be able to read his views on the presidential election in the Tyrconnell Tribune out broadly on Thursday, but many of you know you can get a copy in many places on Wednesday evening. Thanks so much for all your texts coming in. Really appreciate it. Those views, critical. We'll be reading some of them, of course, as this morning wears on. We'll be reading all of them, actually, in fact. Now I'm joined on the programme by Aideen McCarter, who's Head of Culture with Derry City and Strabane District Council. Good morning, Aideen. Thanks so much for joining us.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
I am good, and we're speaking ahead of Europe's biggest Halloween festival. How did Derry find itself in this position? I mean, obviously it's down to promotion and participation and the obvious stuff, right? But to get itself on the map as the premier Halloween festival in all of Europe is really quite a remarkable achievement.
Well, Greg, as many of your listeners will know, the festival is about to celebrate next year its 40th anniversary. It started on the streets of the city in Derry, but nearly 40 years ago. We had a very, I suppose, happenstance beginning. It was one. There's lots of debates over which pub it started in, but it was a fancy dress party in one or at least two pubs that really snowballed. The story goes is that they were put out onto the street after a bomb scare one night, everybody in fancy dress, and started the first unofficial parade on Shipkey Street. It grew in its early years to become a huge event. And again, many of your listeners will know that the council then stepped in, I suppose, to organise it a little bit to try and make it a bit more manageable and formalise the parade, introduce the fireworks. And gradually over the years, it has grown. And it really has grown because the people right across the Northwest love it. And it, you know, was very difficult to grow an event to this scale with purely investment and marketing alone. It can only happen if people embrace it, and that's what makes it so special. We have invested heavily. I mean, between ourselves, Derry City and Strabane District Council, and Tourism Northern Ireland, over recent years, you know, we've increased our investment in the programming and in the marketing. And Tourism Ireland have also invested heavily in marketing Ireland as the home of Halloween. And we've seen, indeed, our colleagues at Donegal County Council and Fall to Ireland also come behind that a lot as well and invest in Halloween programming.
So, and why wouldn't you too? Because, you know, to get 120,000 odd visitors into the city on the very edge of the shoulder or outside the season, whichever way you wanted to look at it, it's a massive boost for any region and, of course, the business community as well.
Absolutely. It is traditionally what would have been the start of the quiet season, particularly in tourism and retail and hospitality. This sort of time of year what was traditionally a sort of a quiet time before you got maybe the lift of Christmas. But this allows the summer season to be extended right through to Christmas. And it is a real lift for our local businesses at this time of year. You know, it does generate a significant amount of money into the economy in the Derry and Strabane Council area, certainly. But right across the northwest, right into Donegal and right up into the north coast, we see the benefits. And particularly with the investment, as I say, that Tourism Ireland is making in marketing Ireland as the home of Halloween, particularly in North America, that sees, you know, a huge number of international visitors coming here. And we've seen that over the last number of years. The kinds of visitors that are coming, they're coming to spend more time on the island, and crucially, I suppose, they're coming to spend more money. It's a really special experience. I mean, we say that Derry Halloween is a little bit like Edinburgh's to New Year, or Rio is Carnival. It's the kind of place that, you know, it is the we would say that certainly the best place, the biggest Halloween event in Europe. It's the best place in the world to celebrate Halloween. And people want to come and experience that. And it's the people that make it special. You know, what our visitors would say to us is they know as soon as they arrive and say they're here for Derry Halloween, everybody from, you know, the taxi driver that'll pick them up at the airport to everybody that they meet when they check in the hotel, they're all talking about it.
And as you say, there's people choosing to travel from all over the world to it. People listening to this show, if the opportunity, if you're living local, just to head up the road to it, which some people would give their eye teeth for. So it really sort of begins this evening, culminating on Friday. Run us through what people can look forward to, Aideen.
So we have activity really our Halloween markets will open from 12 today, and there's lots of activity on all day. The moon, Luke Jerram's The Moon arrived yesterday at the Guildhall. So if you didn't see that the last time I was here, I think in 2019, that's a really special experience. But the core activity is Awakening the Wall City, which we run over three nights, which is tonight, tomorrow night and Thursday night from 6 to 9 p.m. That's where we close largely all of the roads within the Wall City and showcase the best of the arts and culture and history and heritage. It's a real exciting trail. It's an animation trail. There's at least 50 items on the Awakening the Wall City trail. So that's what a lot of people come for these particular nights. And those of you who are familiar, those of your listeners who are familiar with the programme will know that we switch it up then on Friday night, on Halloween night itself. Lots of activity on during the day, and there's a full programme on our website, derryhalloween.com. But the highlight then is obviously our carnival parade, which sees well over 600 participants. There's a huge number of exciting characters coming to participate in the carnival parade this year. It's at 7 o'clock, and then obviously the highlight and the culmination of the overall festival is fireworks on Friday night at 8:15 right across the River Foyle.
Obviously this is a massive policing stroke stewarding operation to make sure that, you know, the movement of people is well controlled. That relies obviously on people heeding direction, but there is a great deal of organisation gone into that, isn't there, as to, you know, where people can park or not park, or how they get about, and in which zones certain activities are happening. Is it easy to navigate for those who might go, right, you know what, this year's the first year I want to go up and see what it's like?
Yeah, it is. It should be very easy to navigate. And there's lots of, I mean, what we say to people, and it's the same advice going to any event of this scale, you know, take your time, plan your journey. There's plenty of information about available car parking and traffic and travel information, public transport options on our website. And I would say take a bit of time, plan your journey. But it is designed, and we put a lot of work into making sure it's safe. But ultimately, we put a lot of work into making sure it's an enjoyable experience for everyone who comes to visit. And that's making sure that there's plenty of room for people to get around, and for people to see and enjoy everything that there is to offer. There's some things that are ticketed. Again, that's usually nearly always clearly indicated on the website. But the majority of the on-street of the Awakening the Wall City experience is free, and it's, you know, it's free to wander around. We are putting in some additional pedestrian measures this year, so there will be some one-way systems for pedestrians, but again that should be fairly self-explanatory, and there's plenty of stewards and staff there to direct people and give them that kind of information. But yeah, it certainly is the kind of thing that you could decide to go to. But like, you know, I would always say take a little look at the website and make a little bit of plan. But there's some, that's the beauty of the experience that we create, particularly the Awakening the Wall City Trail. You can nearly turn around, you know, you can turn around every corner and there's something new and different and exciting. And that's what makes it so special.
Brilliant. And if people want to plan what they attend or any further information on what we've been talking about, the website you mentioned?
It's derryhalloween.com.
Couldn't be simpler. Go ahead.
Yeah, and plenty of our social media channels as well will carry that information too.
Okay, brilliant stuff. Huge numbers. Thanks so very much indeed. Aideen McCarter, Head of Culture with Derry City and Strabane District Council. That is Europe's biggest Halloween festival. Underway in Derry City and Strabane District Council from 12 today, the Halloween markets, and then a series of events from tonight onwards. I'm sure it's something many of you have gone to. The big one, of course, is the Carnival Parade on Friday night. 086 60 25,000, if you've anything to say in relation to that. A caller on the road says, just wondering, when are they going to do something about the traffic lights at Maclay's Corner, Stranall? Are people jumping red lights? If one person jumps, usually a second or third will follow. Or if the light is turning on amber when a car is passing, the car behind usually follows, even though the light is red. Not always an arrow to turn to Letterkenny. Very dangerous. I've not really witnessed that. A junction that I've gone through, obviously, quite a lot. You know, people will go on amber. That is the truth, and they'll try and sort of tail someone, even if it's gone red whilst they're on amber. But I haven't seen much light jumping, because it's the type of junction. I think if you saw that, there'd be a lot of crashes. And I'm not saying it's not happening. Was anyone else asked to take their Poland card home, as they'd no facilities to recycle them? Surely a government body should be leading the way and have recycle bins in each polling stations. That wasn't on my bingo card list for today of things that might come in relation to the election. But people were asked to take their bingo cards home with them in one or two polling stations. I'm not really quite sure, because they didn't have recycling facilities on site. A caller says, the reason Connolly polled well in Donegal was mostly due to the Mica issue and those who follow Sinn Féin. Charles Ward took her to meet many families affected by the blocks. Mary Lou made a clown of herself, celebrating like she'd won herself. Catherine Connolly owes Charles Ward a bigger thanks than Sinn Féin. Of course, but I mean, they were united, and the whole idea is they were united behind the one candidate. That being said, Yeah, she has taken a big interest in defective concrete blocks, no doubt about that. But also, she polled very well in counties where there aren't any DCB, or they haven't actually figured out that there's DCB in the blocks yet. It's inevitable, isn't it? All right, so much more to come, including community garter information after the news and obituary notices.